I found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. Call 1-866-200-0033 or visit alanon.org/hope.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we discuss a recent taxpayer class action brought against two California congressmen alleging complicity in genocide.
The lawsuit accuses these representatives of illegally misusing their authority to approve $26 billion in military aid to Israel.
We'll also speak with Professor Marjorie Feld about her book, The Threshold of Dissent, A History of American Jewish Critics of Zionism.
We will explore with Professor Feld how the suppression of dissent on college campuses today has historic precedent in earlier efforts to silence opposition to Israel's militaristic theocracy.
Stay with us. I'm Heidi Boghossian, New York City attorney and activist.
I'm Stephen Rohde, retired civil rights lawyer and author on issues of civil liberties.
On December 19th, 2024, a coalition of human rights activists and organizations filed an important class action lawsuit against California Congress members Mike Thompson and Jared Huffman. The lawsuit alleges that the representatives illegally misused their authority by approving $26.38 billion in military aid to Israel, despite evidence that these funds contribute to ongoing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. Supported by over 500 plaintiffs across Northern California, the case highlights growing public demands for accountability in U.S. foreign policy. It was filed by the group Taxpayers Against Genocide. At the core of the lawsuit is the argument that Representatives Thompson and Huffman ignored clear evidence of war crimes committed with U.S.-provided weapons, effectively forcing their constituents into moral complicity. Plaintiffs describe the profound emotional and moral injuries they've suffered resulting from their representatives' actions, emphasizing the legal and ethical responsibilities of these elected officials to prevent taxpayer dollars from funding human rights violations.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we hear a very insightful interview about the likely consequences for the American people under the coming Trump administration. We will also hear about a landmark victory for human rights and the rule of law in a case we've been following for at least 16 years here on Law and Disorder.
It's a case brought originally by our own Michael Ratner, litigated successfully by CCR attorney, Center for Constitutional Rights attorney Catherine Gallagher, who hit the Khaki Corporation for $42 million.
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm Jim Lafferty, a decades-long political activist and once the national director of the National Lawyers Guild.
Trump and his cabinet nominees are waiting to take the reins of government in a month on January 20th. As Chris Hedges has said on this program, fascist Trump is a symptom of the disease. He's not the disease. The disease is neoliberal capitalism. If Trump was not there, it would be somebody else. Trump won the popular vote by less than his three predecessors, Biden, Obama, and Bush. He lost in 2020 and attempted to stay in power by a coup that failed. But last month, he succeeded in staging a comeback. He'll be more focused, more organized, and more brutal than he was the last time. During his campaign, he took full advantage of the people's disgust with the neoliberal capitalist Democratic Party and Biden and Harris. Her campaign emphasized joy,
but put forward no real program to address their situation. 70 million people voted against her. Real wages in America have not risen in 50 years. The minimum wage has stayed the same, $7.50 an hour, for the last 15 years under both the Democrats and the Republicans. Half the country is poor or near poor. Most people don't even have enough money in the bank to survive a crisis. For-profit health care is so arbitrary and cruel that Luigi Mangione has become a popular hero, like Robin Hood, even though he shot someone in the back. Food prices have skyrocketed. Rent is too high. Home purchases are impossible for the average person. So is paying college tuition without going into debt. And the final insult was that Trump, the adjudicated rapist and coup specialist, has been named Man of the Year by Time magazine, which put his photo on the cover and wrote about his ringing the bell, opening the New York Stock Exchange, surrounded by his family. On January 20th, he'll be, in his words, dictator for a day. And then he'll start his program of mass deportation and retribution against people in the government that opposed him. Who are the people he has chosen to support this effort? What might we expect? We speak today with returning guest Patrick Martin, who writes for the World Socialist website. Patrick Martin, a warm welcome back to Law and Disorder.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today again. Now, my question to you is this. It's just come up that this bipartisan arrangement, bipartisan bill, really, that the Republicans and Democrats were able to come up with to keep the government open, was now threatened because first you had Elon Musk and then you had Trump saying, no, this is not going to happen. We want to change he wants to change the debt limit and goodness knows everything else. Talk to us about this and what the significance of it is.
Well, I think that the events have to be seen in the context of the whole six-week period since the election, because the radically anti-democratic character of the administration and how it's being formed has become more and more evident. Trump is proceeding on two tracks, which are parallel but not identical. He's testing out and disciplining his own party, and he's also testing out the institutional limitations on his power once he assumes the presidency, what we used to call checks and balances, but which Trump and the fascist right clearly regard as obstacles to be done away with. I mean, if you recall, he began, the first event that took place was the election of a Senate majority leader for the future. The most pro-Trump candidate of the three was defeated. And the candidate backed by Mitch McConnell, his deputy, was elected to lead the Republicans in the Senate. So that was initially a limitation as far as Trump was concerned. And then in the first round of the nominations, he selected a whole series of extremely provocative figures. And perhaps the most provocative was shot down, and that was Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. And they just quickly discovered that they had enough Republican defectors in the Senate that he could not be pushed through. And Trump dropped him almost immediately once that became clear. So he's been testing out the Republicans in the Senate and the Republicans in the House, and that's what yesterday was all about. They quickly proved that it is Trump and not the elected leadership of the Republicans in the House that controls the House delegation. Whether Johnson is to become Speaker again in January is now in considerable doubt. It depends entirely on what his arrangement is with Trump. And you've had various suggestions, including while it might sound preposterous as an indication of where we are at politically, the proposal that the House Republicans should select Elon Musk as the next speaker. Because speaker, by definition, does not have to be a member of Congress.
Patrick Martin, Biden called Trump an aspiring dictator and a fascist. When Trump won the election, Biden welcomed him into the White House and pledged his full cooperation. You've written that this is proof of the Democratic Party's cowardice, duplicity, and bankruptcy. Why'd you write that?
Well, look at the timing. The Democrats were increasingly using what one might sarcastically call the F word in the summer. It was initially, while they were initially reluctant,